We get it underway by welcoming aboard our friend, writer Colin Fleming. Hello there, Colin.
What's up, teacher?
Well, you're teaching. Had students today. I think I had students. It was hard to tell. You know, we were all masked up, but from what I saw of their eyes, they looked younger than me.
Oh, you were in person?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Did you scold anyone? I know you like to do that. You didn't take any photos and post them online, did you?
Not yet, no. No, I only scold other people's kids, not my own.
Oh, okay. But it was good being back in the classroom?
It was great to be back, and it was a little weird, but the kids were great, as they always are. It's never the kids. Kids don't screw anything up. It's the adults who do it.
Right, but you were away for a long time. The longest stretch of your academic career, probably.
It's true. But yeah, like riding a bike, all comes back. I did skin my knee, so it was also like riding a bike. But yeah, I got through it okay. We'll do it again tomorrow. But perhaps to be safe, I need a talisman, which is sort of what we're talking about. How is that for a transition right there? I don't have what you have, which is it's a talisman, it's a beanie. And it's a story, and a really powerful one that you posted on the Many Moments More blog. And I've seen your hat many times that says vaccines. And I knew that there were many people who misunderstood it, but you go into even more detail.
Yes, it's for people who've been to the website, despite my dwindling traffic. It's the hat we're talking about is the one that I'm wearing right on the front page there. And yes, it says vaccines. It's this maroon beanie. Have it on now, in fact, as I'm down here by the harbor. And I go to this market called the Golden Goose, which sounds enchanted and magical, right? But it's really just an overpriced North End convenience store. And I see this one guy in there, and I was writing about this in the blog, who his wife is a doctor. So he thinks I'm like Mr. Pro-Shot, not that I'm like anti-shot, but he wants to have this kind of like weird medical talk with me. And like maybe now with COVID, as if I've stumbled upon or I'm working towards a fix. But in reality, the vaccine, they're a band and they're from England. And their first record came out in 2012. And as this blog entry details, it's what I was listening to a lot as I wrote three books simultaneously. That's kind of why it's notable. My life had fallen apart, and I was in a house that I was shortly going to be forced from. And so I just was wearing this beanie at the time and living a really difficult stretch of existence.
And talk about, if you can, what the band did for you, how they helped you get through all of this.
Yeah, I don't know that I wouldn't give myself credit for being through it, and I would say now at this point I'm even more in the thick of it. But they had this record that came out, and it was their first LP, and I just had it on all the time. In some weird way, the song seemed to, I don't know how much I ought to go into, but this was a period when, I mean, I was in my 30s, I had a stroke, I mean, I almost died, I was sitting there spitting up blood into a cup and writing and literally crying on the floor and pulling my hair out because my life had come completely undone. And what was notable for me was I was sitting there, I was listening to this record, I was writing three books at once. Two of them we've talked about it at some length, Dark March and Anglerfish Comedy Troupe, and another book, Buried on the Beaches, which we've always also talked about, which I had to write as like a vacation to be able to have the emotional strength to do the other two. So it was quite a lot happening at once. And now you know me. So since we've known each other, you've always known me as this guy who has like 11 new works a week or whatever it might be. I wasn't that way prior to this. I was more productive than other people by far, certainly in my field, if I even have a field. But this whole thing where I was just cranking it like I crank it now, and what I said in the blog entry was, like, you have a calendar year in which you were born, but really for me, I think about like my time on this earth and as what I am is really beginning back in 2012 when I was listening to this record and writing these books. It changed me emotionally, mentally, intellectually, spiritually, fundamentally, every single which way possible.
And a couple of interesting things that you mentioned here. One is that the books were not about you, and also that while they are incredibly painful and come out of a painful time, they're also very hopeful and as we know, filled with pain, but filled with humor as well.
I think so, because if you're... I wanted to have two books in particular, and they were sort of like sister books, that would codify pain in a way that no work of art ever had. I wanted to have... I was in this unique position where I had this different kind of skill set. I was as raw as I'd ever been. I was as creative as I think anyone had ever been. And it was just this pressure cooker, this test tube of all these things coming together. And you think about something like Mozart's Requiem or Dylan's Blood on the Tracks is maybe a better example. And I wanted to like go Blood on the Tracks times Blood on the Tracks times Blood on the Tracks as much as I could. And to really get that over, I think, with people, you also need to make them laugh. And if you just can't like pound people with grief. But the thing is, everyone who's lost something or been some in a pain they couldn't think they could handle, no matter if they were right or wrong, they always think it's a pain that is unique to them and is probably more than what other people have had. So, like, even if you hadn't really lost that much in your life, you tend to think at some point that you did. So I had these two books that just seemed the most relatable thing ever. But it wasn't about, like, oh, it's some guy, and he had a wife, and he had an affair, and she left, and he had a stroke. It wasn't really... The books themselves were not about that. They were about all of these strange things, like a basement getting deeper in a house as the roof upstairs got shorter, and these strange phenomenon, and the way that grief just overruns even our perceptions. You can have so much grief that it needs some place to go that becomes almost like post-human, especially human, but post-human, and it manifests itself in all these other forms. So I'm sitting there, I'm vomiting, I'm crying on the floor, I'm ripping out the hair, I'm writing these books, and really becoming a completely different person, which in turn made my life a lot worse because I became even more different than the people of an industry who want you to be exactly like them. But I wasn't thinking that way at the time. I just was becoming the kind of artist that they really hadn't been before.
Colin Fleming with us here on Downtown. In your post, you talk about this concept of humanness. And I have to wonder, is there a place, and you're wondering this too, I'm sure, is there a place for humanness in the publishing world these days and what it's become?
It's interesting that you say that. I ask myself that, or I wonder that. I tend to think that if I'm going to have the impact that I believe I can have, it's not going to be because of the publishing industry. I don't think it's going to be despite the publishing industry. I think it's going to be because there's someone who's come along who can make things happen that need to happen in a way that no one has previously. I think that's ultimately what it's going to be. And you know me well enough, and I think you probably agree with that too, that for me to do what I'm trying to do, I'm going to have to transcend all of this. And I think I do. I think it's quite obvious to anyone who reads my work or knows me or has heard a number of these exchanges between us that, oh, yeah, that's not how someone writes. That's not how blogs look. That's not how books read. That's not how people sound on the radio. I think that's pretty axiomatic. But the publishing industry, it needs to die because it's anti-reading. It's anti-art, and when you say art, it sounds like it's going to be heavy and pretentious. That's not what I mean. It's anti-connectivity. It's anti-inclusivity. It's not trying to reach people to impel them, to grab them at the level of their heart, their souls, their minds. That's not what it's about, and that's what I'm about, and that's partially what I'm about because of what happened when I was in that house. And then a couple years ago, I had a nervous breakdown, and I'd come on the radio, and I'd be funny, and write the works of art, and write the novel in a week, but I couldn't even open the mail. I mean, even now, it's like my days conclude with, like, jags of, like, crying in the fetal position, like, quite literally. And this hat became almost this, not like I'm Linus with a blue security blanket, but it was something I put on. It was a reminder. It's like, okay, you can face these monsters. You can do what you have to do. Throw up in the bucket, write some more, keep going. So it really took on a life of its own that was more than just like, oh, look, it's the beginning.
And as you said, everybody's pain, everybody's suffering is relative to the individual. It feels like the worst thing anybody could possibly go through. So how do you keep going? Whether it's on the highest of levels, the most small, intimate, and personal level, how do you dig deep? How do you persevere? How do you move forward?
I think, well, the answer would be different for me than it might be for some other people. I have a very clear goal in mind. I have a very precise point that I am trying to get to. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything for me to say it at this point. I have so much against me. I'm trying to change the world to the good more than anyone else ever has. I think I have that in me. I think I can do it if a number of things go my way, if I get past the people of this industry, if I get a chance to reach the world, because I'm not like anything. Other people and me at other times in my life, I'd get by with records. I mean, it was before something like I discovered this particular record. And that is true. That is something about pain that, like, if you're in middle school and you've had a breakup, you are going to think that it's like you're Christ and you've been nailed to the cross and woe is me. And you don't think, because in many ways we're not good at empathy, not because we're all like horrible dicks, but empathy requires a great deal of imagination. You have to project into someone else's life. That is a real challenge. It's more of a intellectual, mental issue than like, oh, I'm a good person, oh, I'm a bad person. And so I think works of art that we can relate to, which there aren't a lot in the world right now, that's what sees so many of us through. And when I say that, we can all think of things. We all have like a mini list in our minds right now of books or films or records or whatever it might be. I mean, I even know some about you from afar. So I think it's that. I think it's that stuff that we can connect with that shines that light into that kind of cave.
For you, but also for other people, how do you find purpose, especially when it seems like the options are limited for you?
Options of purpose are limited for me?
No, for other people, if they reach that point in life where it seems like that, I mean, you've got that mission, but for other people, when it feels like the deck is stacked against you, how do they find purpose?
I've noticed this. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have noticed this. People are more lacking in purpose than maybe ever before. I don't know a lot of people with true purpose. I know a lot of people who do what they think is expected of them because they don't know what else to do. They meet, they marry, they breed, they rear, right? Then the grandparent, and then they die. And I think a lot of that isn't this gung-ho purpose so much as what the hell else am I going to do? Because usually people do, they'll have a couple kids, and it's like, well, this is getting boring. I should breed again. I really think we struggle to find purpose, and that impacts our mental health. Maybe not on the conscious level of like, woe is me, I lack for purpose, but you know, it's always, there are these things tucked away inside of us that we don't consciously think about, and they tend to impact us far more and have greater presence than the things we do think about. I think you have to start pretty small. It's like, it's a metaphor, but when I run those stairs, it wasn't like I was running up and down that Bunker Hill Monument 20 times the first time. I had a friend whose mom died recently. It was weird because it was like coming into like my sort of area of expertise, right? He has a pretty like easy, happy life. And I'm like coaching this fellow like, okay, listen to a podcast. Occupy the mind for 30 minutes. Read a book to your kids. Go for a run for a half hour, and it starts to add up. And when you're out there and you're alone and you're running or you're listening to Mozart or whatever it is, the truth starts filtering in through your mind and those other levels, and purpose begins to emerge that way. But it's not going to emerge through Twitter or Netflix or just like gabbing. It comes through those other arenas, those other avenues.
But it doesn't have to be, and it can't for everyone be a creative outlet, because everybody doesn't have that ability, that talent, and not everybody who breeds, not everybody who parents finds purpose in it, but I think there are those people who see that as their purpose and devote themselves to that.
Sure, of course, and I'm not saying you have to go out and write a symphony, but I guess what I'm saying is you need to find a place, a thing with which you can be fully present. That Michael Jordan docuseries that we had talked about, one guy says the key thing, I remember who it was in the entire series, they say he is so good because he's always fully present. And I identified with that immediately. That's how I write. I am fully in that. When you say, how do you like make a story where you just know the characters right away? Because I'm fully present with them. And that can be different things for different people. But I think it gets, you have to get away from that echo chamber of the dating app, the Twitter. I mean, I see some people whose entire professional lives, too, is oriented around Twitter. And yeah, I hope to have 13.7 million followers later to hear what I have to say and learn about the new book coming out. But for most people, you know exactly what it is. It's a kind of like intellectual, sub-intellectual, mental masturbation for cheap plaudits. And you're not going to get purpose that way. You need to stick your hands under your legs and listen to something, watch something, listen to somebody. I mean, listening's a lost art. Truly be present, ask good questions, and purpose begins to, I think, emerge, maybe despite ourselves.
Yeah, you're right. You're not going to find that on social media. Let me ask this of you. Where do you find security? Can you find security?
What kind of security, right? It almost reminds me of, like, Mick Jagger was giving an interview in, like, 1965. And the interviewer says, like, are you satisfied? He's like, do you mean intellectually satisfied? Satisfied? Well, wink, wink.
What would it mean to you? What would security feel like for you? Do you have it already? Does it come within the world of your own art, your own creativity?
No, I'll have it. Look, I'm either going to die like this, and this is going to be how it plays out, or I'm going to arrive. And arrival will be my security. Right now, because of various things. I mean, look, I would literally walk 3,000 miles a year. I'm like something out of the Old Testament. It's not really how people are. I've walked 3,000 miles a year with just my thoughts, and you can imagine the evolution, what that's like. What kind of hell on earth that is, too, to walk with your thoughts like that. I've mastered a couple things. I've mastered who I am on the inside. I know who I am. And I've mastered art in terms of what I can do with it. My problem is that I don't have control beyond that. And I have talked about quality of life. If you saw how I live, you'd be horrified. You might think like, oh, it sounds pretty bad. But it's worse than that. It's a nightmare's nightmare. So for me, everything is, I was saying to someone today, if I was where I was at, I'd take 6 months away from writing anything at all, because you have to realize I just process millions and millions of words a week, the combinations of words, what they mean. My whole life is just looking at words, to the point that now when I create a work of art, there's no joy in it. It's like splitting a log. It's like, okay, stack it. And so that's not where I want to be. And I just keep trying to find ways. You help, Bruce helps, sometimes little comments from people that I wouldn't expect help. I just find a way to try to keep alive and going.
Well, keep on keeping on. Keep the beanie close at hand, and we'll talk with you again next week. Thank you, Colin.
All right.
Colin Fleming with us on Downtown. Visit the Many Moments More blog, subscribe to that, and look at all his work at ColinFlemingLit.com.